time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7 The Game.
Come on!
Yes, sir. Good morning, family. It is Stephen Leifert in on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game, leading you up until 6 o'clock, where Kozlow and Dibs are going to take over to get you started for the day. But this is the pregame show, and I mean, we got a lot to talk about today. We do, this morning, for the next hour. And I don't know where to start. Well, I do, because I kind of planned it. But I don't know where to start. Because yesterday was a great day in sports. Unfortunately, the A's had to postpone their series against the Mariners, so we're going to have to wait on that. I believe tomorrow or after tomorrow is when they're going to be starting up those games again, and they're going to try and replace them with doubleheaders. So looking forward to the A's getting started after some issues with COVID-19. But the Giants getting a 23-5 win yesterday, it was pretty crazy. So how we started out the day in sports, at least this is how I started out my, I don't know how you start out your day, whenever, at least your day in sports watching. But for me, I got home, I took a nap because I need to. And I mean, if you wake up this early and you don't take a nap in the middle of the day, then you're just done. You're done. So took a nap, woke up at about the third quarter for the Celtics and the Raptors, and it was close at first, and then the Celtics pulled away, then the Raptors came back, and then toward the end, Kemba Walker makes a step back two, and the rest is history. Celtics go on, 2-0 in the series. That's where we're at right now with that. Then, after that, we had Game 7 of the Jazz versus the Nuggets, which I'm going to get to in a little bit. And as that started, we had the Giants and the Rockies going. Kevin Gausman going up against John Gray, something that's going to get lost in yesterday. A lot of the talk today is going to be on Alex Dickerson, Donovan Solano, Brandon Crawford. The first time a trio has had 6 RBIs each in a game since 1920. But we are going to get to this Nuggets and Jazz game first, because it started out that it was going to be Donovan Mitchell versus Jamal Murray. That was going to be the matchup to watch. And in the first half, Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray were kind of cold. I think they're over-under in terms of the betting totals was 33.5. I took the under on Jamal Murray. But the whole point of watching that game was to watch a Murray versus Mitchell matchup. But instead, what we got was an old school battle toward the end that ended up being 80-78 as the Nuggets get the victory. But what was funny was in the first half, the Jazz were just so cold, and the Nuggets came out hot. Michael Porter Jr. was doing whatever he wanted in the second quarter. It felt like the Nuggets were grabbing every single offensive rebound that was coming their way. And if I'm not mistaken, they were leading toward the end of the second half. They were up by 10 on rebound, plus 10 in terms of rebounds over the Jazz. So it turned out to be that way. Then in the third quarter, that's when the Jazz started getting rolling, and they started to come back. Donovan Mitchell started to get hot. Then in the fourth quarter, that's when it became the Gobert versus Jokic show, where Gobert had the most energy on the floor. Everyone was tired, and it looked like Jokic was tired at one point because he shot a three that was short of the rim and hit the front of the rim, and you could tell with 2 minutes left, everyone was just gassed, and they were just running on fumes at that point in this Game 7, and they were just doing whatever they had to do. And toward the end of the game, it was just about as thrilling of a finish as you would see, even though it was a low-scoring matchup because they weren't knocking down threes. They were just getting to the rim. And it was just a dogfight in there. And what happened was the Jazz ended up wasting a timeout, and the ball was stolen, and the Nuggets, for some reason, instead of maybe even kicking it out to Gary Harris, trying to get a foul call, instead they tried going up for the layup. They missed. The Jazz were able to take the ball on the other end of the floor, and Mike Conley had enough time to get off a three. Not sure if he had enough time to pass to Donovan Mitchell, who was wide open in the corner. But Mike Conley was able to get up a three. He missed it, and the game was over. This is what happened at the end. Take a listen.
They finally get it to Mitchell. 10 on the shot clock. Had it back tapped. He lost it. The Nuggets come up with a defensive play. Murray. They missed the layup. Gobert got it. Mitchell hanging at the other end. 2 seconds to go for the win. And it rims out.
And that is courtesy of ESPN. What's funny about sports is that if that would have gone a different way, let's just say the Jazz had a timeout left. They didn't waste it. Let's just say they had that one timeout left, and the Nuggets went up for that layup at the end and missed it. Jazz call timeout, go on the other end of the floor, have enough time to try and maybe score a bucket, maybe take it to OT, not even try and have to score a three, get the two, have it be tied 80-80, go to overtime, and see what happens from there. But instead, the Jazz end up missing the three, and the Nuggets get the win in Game 7. And Warrior fans are all too familiar with those ever so terrible words that still hurt, but they blew a 3-1 lead. The Jazz blew a 3-1 lead. They didn't have Bojan Bogdanovic in there, so they weren't really at full strength, and it was a great series to watch. It was a lot of fun to watch. It's always fun to watch a team come back from 3-1 and make it to Game 7. And being on the other end of that, we can sympathize with Jazz fans a little bit, even though the ones for the Warriors stings a little bit more since it was in the final against the Cavs. But still an overall entertaining series. Here's Donovan Mitchell after the game talking about how they'll be back next season.
We went from being an unsalvageable team about 3 months ago to this. And I don't think anybody outside of us expected that. And I'm happy with the way we played. Obviously not the result, but look, man, like we got things that we know we can fix. And like I said, we felt like we kind of gave certain situations where we had control of the series and we let it get out of hand. And if you would have told us before coming here, we would have had control of 3-1 of a series without Bojan. Not to say I would have thought you were lying. I have belief, faith in us. But, you know, it was something that just didn't seem, I guess a team like that, too, just didn't seem as real as it was. And we got down here, we worked, and everybody locked in, from the rookies to the coaches. We just got to do more.
And you can expect that Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are going to be the two cornerstones of that Jazz franchise, and they'll be ones, I think they'll be back. That's all I'll say about the Utah Jazz, is that they'll be back. The Denver Nuggets move on. I don't know if they're going to make it past the next round. They probably won't, because it's a tough matchup coming up, but it was a fun series overall, and everything that's going on within the bubble right now has been very fun to watch. But in case you missed it, though, if you follow Sarah Langs on Twitter at S Langs on Sports, she is a baseball columnist, and she essentially was giving us updates on how historic Alex Dickerson's night was, as Alex Dickerson had a 3-home run and 2-double night. He's the first player in Giants history with 5 extra base hits in a game. The last time a Giants player had 4 was in August 27th of 2002, when Barry Bonds did it at Coors Field. And there's a lot that you can go through here. The Giants have scored 22 runs for the first time since June 8th in 1990, when they scored 23 at the Braves, and obviously they ended with 23. Here's the thing with those types of games, too. It makes me sad whenever Drew Butera, the catcher, is out there in the 8th inning. That game for the Giants when Tyler Heineman was pitching, it's the saddest I've been watching a Giants game all year. And right now, they're in that 8th playoff spot. This is a lot of fun to watch. 18-19 on the year. if it was a regular season, probably wouldn't be looking at it the same way. Just be looking at this as a hot streak. But considering it's a shorter season, they actually have enough time to the point where they could stick around and possibly make it into the playoffs. They got to last about a little less than 4 weeks, but they could do it. I really do believe that. And what Alex Dickerson did last night, it's, you know, it's obviously it's unexpected, but also it's something that Alex Dickerson has proven before, that when he gets the bat on the ball and when his swing is there and when he's seeing the ball well, he can crush it. Right? I mean, he had that game with six RBIs in that one debut. And now, he gets five extra base hits in this game. And there's a lot to go over, too. Brandon Crawford and Donovan Solano, each with six RBIs of their own. Again, the first trio to do that since 1920. And Alex Dickerson hitting three home runs and two doubles, along with Chris Bryant and Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals since 2015. He's the third player to do so. Before that, in baseball's history, it hadn't really been done. So what Alex Dickerson did, it was historic to watch. We're going to get into all the details coming up, all the highlights. But something else that caught my eye was Joey Bart.
Hit on the ground and off the glove of Hampson as Crawford was taking off on the pitch, and he's going to score. It's 7-0.
Joey Bart with the RBI single. He had three hits on the day. He looked really good. He's looked more comfortable at the plate as of late, and just getting his confidence up is what you like to see from Joey Bart. And one more play, and we'll get to all the highlights and the sound of Gabe Kapler. He talked about Alex Dickerson and some funny quotes here from Brandon Belt as well. But one play that really caught my eye yesterday was this one.
Hit well to right. Yastrzemski over. He dives and he makes the catch. He was in the air for a while, and he takes it away from Murphy.
Damn. Mike Yastrzemski making the diving catch. And that one was impressive to me because of the distance that he traveled and the fact that when you're watching these slow-mo replays, you could tell whether it's really that impressive of a catch depending on where their body is. And Yaz's body was in midair as he made that catch. And that is impressive. So that's just a couple of plays there that really caught my eye, besides what happened with Alex Dickerson, Brandon Crawford, Donovan Solano. We'll continue to discuss this coming up next. 23-5, the Giants get the win over the Rockies at Coors Field. 888-957-9570 is the phone number, as well as the Chilton Autobody text line. And you know me. You know I like to read the text line. We're all up at 5:13 in the morning just trying to get by here. Feel free to text in anything you want. You know, text in stuff about life. But coming up, we are going to get some updates on Fred Warner. Cam Inman was on the morning show yesterday, and he gave us an update on Fred Warner and what to expect. We had an injury with the Raiders yesterday with Tyrell Williams. We'll see how that can impact the season going forward. You're going to hear from Bobby Evans, who was on the station yesterday. Ryan Hollins had some comments on the Warriors. We got a lot to get into today on the pregame show. Stephen Langford in 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
Stephen Langford on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game. I tend to mumble through the instrumentals as we come back. It is Stephen Langford, though, leading you up until 6 o'clock when Kozlow and Dibs will take you the rest of the way. The Giants getting that 23-5 win over the Rockies. Talked a little bit about the Nuggets and the Jazz from last night. Incredibly exciting game to watch. Wasn't too thrilling in the first half because it felt like the Nuggets were just doing whatever they wanted with the Jazz. They were grabbing every single board possible. And toward the end there, it kind of became the, instead of the Jamal Murray versus Donovan Mitchell show, it became the Donovan Mitchell show toward the third quarter there, the beginning of the second half. But it ended up being the Jokic versus the Gobert show at the end when everyone seemed gassed. And it was the Nuggets who came out on top because the Jazz ended up wasting a timeout toward the end and down the stretch. And the Nuggets, they almost messed that game up by trying to go for a layup toward the end. And, oh, man. From the 415, Langford, the Jazz versus the Nuggets shot the ball like you at your 24-hour pickup games. Hey, look, say what you want about me in my pickup games, okay? But I could shoot. All right, I got stroke. But yeah, they were. I'm not exactly a 50% shooter from three, but yeah, they were shooting the ball pretty bad yesterday. It just didn't look too great. And then Jokic with that unbelievable post up. It was watching two big men go at it there while each team is racing to score 80 made you feel like you were watching a game in the 90s. It was great. It was great. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was a good game seven after all, and at the end, it turned into a dogfight. It was a lot of fun, but the Nuggets do move on, and the Jazz, they will be back going forward. They will be back for sure. So Sarah Langs, she's an MLB columnist, and she's always keeping up with the historical data, whatever you, however you pronounce it. She's always keeping up with the historical baseball data compared to what's going on now. And with Alex Dickerson, what he was doing, the first thing that popped up was Alex Dickerson. This is from Sarah Langs. You can follow her at S Langs on Sports. Here's the first one. Alex Dickerson is the first Giants player with a homer in each of the first two innings of a game since Stan Javier on April 11th, 1999. Against the Padres. And the Giants, man, I don't know what happened with John Gray from the Colorado Rockies, but Coors Field, the Giants always tend to perform there. One of my weirdest memories, anytime there's a big home run hit, whether it was Brandon Belt when he hit it 475 feet, but the one that I always go back to, oddly enough, is Nate Sheerholz hitting a 467-foot jack at Coors Field. That's when it really opened my eyes. Like, oh, this contact hitter. I mean, Coors Field has always been a bandbox, but this contact hitter can hit it 467 feet. Anybody can hit it 467 feet. And Alex Dickerson got started early.
High drive to right. Dickerson, it is out of here, and it's in the upper deck. Wow. He said his swing was good. It's the best he's felt all year.
As far as exit velocity goes, that wasn't even his hardest hit ball of the day. However, it was the farthest that he hit the ball. He hit that 480 feet in distance. And it was one. It's interesting with baseball and not having any fans. Besides just the not having fans part and not having them cheer. And oddly enough, at the end of the game, 23-5, having the crowd cheer at the end, or having the crowd noise committed cheer when Drew Butera got out of the inning, finally a scoreless inning for them. They scored in every single inning up until the ninth when a catcher in Drew Butera was pitching. Then they didn't score then. How odd is that? But that first home run from Dickerson, normally when there are fans in the stands, now in the beginning of the game, there actually would have been. Had it been in the ninth inning or the eighth inning, there wouldn't have been any fans there. I don't know why any would have stayed. But you kind of lose the ball. You don't really know where it's at. And with the way the sun was hitting Coors Field at the beginning of the game and the fact that there weren't any fans there, you don't see the crowd try and reach up and grab the ball. You don't see any of that. So I didn't even know where the ball landed. And it ended up being 480 feet. And Alex Dickerson didn't stop there, but I'm going to play a couple of other highlights here because it's crazy. Dickerson, Solano, and Crawford, six RBIs each. First trio to do that since 1920. And Donovan Solano just kept it going.
Lines this one into center field. Hampton on the move. Still, it's Pilar. It's over his head. Longoria's going to score. What's Belt going to do? Well, he's going to score. And Solano, you're right. He makes him pay, and it's 3-0.
Credit NBC Sports Bay Area for all of this audio that we are going to be getting today. Donovan Solano has just looked so good at the plate. And don't look now. and Solano's a big reason for this. Don't look now, but the Giants are leading Major League Baseball in hits with 335. Next, I don't know how long they're going to keep that, because next up are the Chicago White Sox with 332. But that is still something very impressive and something to keep an eye on. But in the second inning, Alex Dickerson got another chance, and he took advantage.
Dickerson hits another high drive to right. It is out of here. I think he shook off to get to the breaking ball.
I think you're right.
He just didn't stop. His swing, when it's on point and when he's hot, we've seen what Alex Dickerson can do. And last year, before he went out with an oblique strain, he was hitting the ball real well. So as long as he stays healthy right now, it doesn't seem like there's anything that could stop Alex Dickerson and him feeling comfortable at the plate. But one of the other things that happened yesterday was Joey Bart, he got going.
Hit on the ground and off the glove of Hampson as Crawford was taking off on the pitch, and he's going to score. It's 7-0.
Joey Bart was 3-for-5 yesterday, and he looked comfortable at the plate. Listen to this, okay? I haven't even counted these yet. But hard-hit baseballs, that's what they call hard-hit, quote-unquote. That means when a ball is hit mostly 97, 98 miles an hour off the bat. You might get, if your team is hit well, you will probably get maybe 7 to 10 hard-hit baseballs, and that's fine. But as I'm counting right now, the Giants had 6, 10, 13, 14, 17, 19, 5 of them off Alex Dickerson, 24, 26. 26 hard-hit baseballs yesterday. That doesn't happen too often. If you get around 7 to 10 hard-hit balls, and you've had a pretty good day, I'd say, at the plate as far as the team. But Alex Dickerson contributed 5 of those 24. And Brandon Crawford, stay hot.
And Crawford hits a high drive to right. It is out of here. And Crawford hits his 4th of the year, and the Giants have busted this one wide open.
Crawford 3-for-6 on the year, or on the day yesterday, with 6 RBIs and that 3-run home run accounting for a majority of them. And if you remember last year when they had the doubleheader at Coors Field, that's when Brandon Crawford really popped off and was doing historic things. But going down the list, Yastrzemski 2-for-4, Dickerson 5-for-6, Longoria 2-for-5, Brandon Belt 3-for-3, Wilmer Flores 1-for-4, who's normally the hot hitter in these sort of situations, Donovan Solano 4-for-6, Brandon Crawford 3-for-6, Joey Bart 3-for-5, Mauricio Dubon 2-for-5. They were hitting the ball so well yesterday, and let's not also... Let's just give some credit as well to Kevin Gausman. Kevin Gausman looked good. 5 innings pitched, 2 hits on 2 earned runs with 5 Ks. He, before the start yesterday, was 8th in the league in strikeouts per 9 innings. So they take the amount of strikeouts you have in each start, and they try and basically equate it to how many that would be with 9 innings, and they do all the math, and he was 8th in the league, which is really tough to do. Tyler Glass now is leading the league. He has about 15 strikeouts per inning, per 9 innings, while Kevin Gausman is an 8th, and he has 12 strikeouts per 9 innings. And there's a bunch of decimals that go into it. I don't want to give you that many numbers, but it was Alex Dickerson who had the big night.
Dickerson goes the other way, hit well, it is out of here. He's got a 3-homer game. He's got 3 more RBIs, and it's now 16-2. Have a night.
Wow.
And he almost hit a 4th with that double off the wall. Again, from Sarah Langs, S. Langs on Sports on Twitter. Overall, it's the 6th time a Giants player has had 3 home runs through 6 innings, including Willie Mays on April 30th, 1961, in his eventual 4-homer game. He's the first Giants player with 3 home runs through 6 innings since Millie McCovey on April 22nd, 1964. Gabe Kapler spoke after the game, and no more criticism for Gabe Kapler when they're winning.
Yeah, among the best I've seen. Obviously, he ties the record for total bases by a Giant with Willie Mays, and that's quite an accomplishment. One of the better all around statistical performances I've seen, but also like every swing he took was right on time, and he even had some near misses that he was synced up on and got his A swing off on. So it was a really good performance by Alex.
Seeing the ball, timing, your swing, all of it, feeling comfortable at the plate, you combine that and you can have a night like Alex Dickerson had. By the way, Marcell Ozuna also with a 3-homer night in his game yesterday, the first National League player to do so at Fenway Park. He obviously did that against the Red Sox. But Gabe Kapler continued and talked about how proud he is of the team.
Yeah, no, I certainly appreciated that every inning we were scratching and clawing for every inch. And there are plenty of good performances to go around up and down the lineup and some much needed production. So yeah, it was certainly a good game top to bottom. I think everybody in our clubhouse knows, Manolo, that we have to be thinking about winning every night's baseball game. We have to come out ready for whoever's in the opposing dugout. And obviously when you're facing teams that you're chasing, the games tend to take on added importance.
So we're going to get to the playoffs. And I mean, I'm not saying the Giants automatically are getting to the playoffs. They're 18-19 on the year after all. And the playoffs competition wise, probably not going to be as good because we do have the expanded playoff teams this year. It's like the eighth seed. They're getting into the eighth seed. But this is a lot of fun to watch. The Giants are keeping it interesting. In a regular 162 game season, we'd be looking at this win as just, that's a fun win to watch, but really, what does this matter in the grand scheme of things? Well, right now, in the grand scheme of things, we're less than 4 weeks away from the playoffs, and if they continue to get wins, especially over teams like the Rockies, who are in contention right now, and the Marlins getting the win over the Blue Jays, didn't think I'd be keeping track of the Miami Marlins and what they're doing. But in the end, I am. Starling Marte, traded from the Diamondbacks, ends up getting the game-winning homer. And they win 3-2 over the Blue Jays, a very good Blue Jays team. We're keeping track of teams that we never thought we'd keep track of this year, including the Giants, and they're on a hot streak right now, 18-19 on the year. Was a lot of fun watching that game yesterday. Also, I kind of just thought about this, but you know, they need like a 20-run slaughter rule. You know, in Little League, you have the slaughter rule. It's a 10-run thing, but I just felt bad for the Rockies afterwards. Coming up, I'll read off the Rockies tweet. Rockies Twitter is the Rockies team Twitter is one of the best as far as team sports go on social media. They always have something witty or funny to say. But theirs was just straight up sad. So I'll read that next. We got an update on Fred Warner from Cam Inman, 49ers linebacker, as he was put on the reserve COVID list, and we're all kind of shrouded in mystery here. We just don't really know what to expect with Fred Warner. So we'll get an update from him. We also got a lot of sound to get to from Bobby Evans, who former Giants GM who joined Bronte Steine and Guru yesterday. And he talked about this 2020 Giants team. He talked about Joey Bart, Mike Yastrzemski, not trading at the deadline, all that sort of stuff. We'll get to all that next. Stephen Langford on the pregame show, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Stephen Langford.
In case you're just getting into your car this morning and you haven't listened to any of the pregame show starting at 5 a.m. every Monday through Friday, leading up until 6 o'clock, and Kozlo and Dibs are going to take you the rest of the way. One of my favorite texts that I've received in quite a while from the 415, this happened about 20 minutes ago, but Langford, the Jazz versus the Nuggets, shot the ball like you at your 24-hour pickup games. They both shot 25% from three. Although, I think that you could have hit me harder with saying, you know, you shoot like Kemba Walker shot yesterday. I mean, you know, he made a step back two when it counted. but he was 1 for 8 from three. That was what happened yesterday. So let me take you through it. Now I'll get to some sound here from Bobby Evans and Cam Minman. We got a lot to talk about. Plus, I do want to get into this injury for Tyrell Williams for the Raiders, for the Las Vegas Raiders, and you know why I think that it stinks, but ultimately I think that they can work around it. But my schedule yesterday was went home, took a nap. I like to do that. Tend to take a little nap, a little nappy nap. And I woke up at about 2-3 o'clock and managed to make it to the third quarter of the Raptors versus the Celtics. So I didn't really see, I didn't really watch any of the first half of that game. So I couldn't give you any proper analysis really. But Kemba Walker, all I saw was that he was 0 for 7 from 3 after missing another one. I was just like, oof, that's brutal. And the Raptors couldn't get it done in the end, as the Celtics did end up winning that game by 3, and it looked close, but the Raptors didn't have any timeouts left at the end of the game. Fred VanVleet having to go up through to make a circus shot, and the Raptors doing all they can. Kyle Lowry doing all he can. Shout out to Kyle Lowry. I'm a Kyle Lowry fan. But that game yesterday for the Jazz versus the Nuggets was just a throwback to the 90s. It turned into, it was supposed to be the Jamal Murray versus Donovan Mitchell show. And if you are a betting man or woman, there was the over under. I think Donovan Mitchell's, at least for my, at least on my end, the over under for Donovan Mitchell was at 34.5, and the over under for Jamal Murray was at 33.5. And I took the under for Jamal Murray. I just didn't think that after a 50-point, 50-42, and 50-point game, I didn't think that he'd be able to score over 33. Ended up hitting that under. But that game ended up being the Jokic versus the Gobert show, and I was a fan of watching that. Everyone was gassed toward the end of that game. They were running on fumes during that game 7. And it was a tough series because, you know, they were up 3-1. The Jazz were, and the Nuggets ended up coming back and winning and blowing the 3-1 lead. The 12th team in NBA history to come back from a 3-1 deficit. And Warriors fans, we know all too well what it's like to have that 3-1 lead squandered. Sorry for bringing that up. 888-957-9570 is the Chilton Auto Body text line and the phone number. Feel free to weigh in. It is me and you this morning leading up to Coe's Low and Dibs. And it was this guy who had the big game yesterday as the Giants beat the Rockies 23-5.
High drive to right. Dickerson, it is out of here, and it's in the upper deck.
Wow. He said his swing was good. It's the best he's felt all year.
That's courtesy of NBC Sports Bay Area, and that ball went 480 feet. I didn't see it land in right field. We don't have any crowd who are reaching out to grab home runs, so sometimes it's hard to see the ball, and with the way the sun was reflecting on Coors Field, he couldn't really see it, and apparently it went 480 feet. Absolutely crushed it. And it's the second longest home run this year to Giancarlo Stanton, who hit one 482 feet. Random fun fact, was watching MLB Network out of nowhere. I even forgot who the Yankees were playing at this point. But Giancarlo Stanton was up at the plate, and I saw him hit that 482-footer. It was insane. I don't know how that guy does it. But anyway, that's besides the point. Alex Dickerson with a big night last night. Man, I don't know how you get 5 extra base hits, totaling 16 bases, which ties Willie Mays. It's amazing what can happen in a season where it's short, it's truncated, you don't expect any milestones to really be reached. You know, we were talking about whether the 400 batting average, whether that could happen. The home run record obviously won't be broken. You know, home run records for teams and the league won't be broken, all that sort of stuff. But this game magically appears as they get the 23-5 win, scoring in every inning up until the ninth inning when they managed to not get a run off of Drew Butera, the catcher. Just makes me sad every time we see a catcher going in. It's like when you watch a catcher pitch, it's the saddest thing on the planet. And anytime there's a positional player that goes, anytime there's a positional player that goes into the game, I always go back to manager Gabe Kapler when he was with the Rays. And I think this was in 2000 and man, I think it was in 2009, maybe even 2007, 2008. I don't know. One of those late 2000s years, but Nick Swisher came in to pitch and he struck out Gabe Kapler. And that was my first time I ever heard of Gabe Kapler before in the late 2000s when he struck out against Nick Swisher. And anytime there's a positional player that goes into pitch, I always think of that. But Bobby Evans, he was on with Bonte Steine and Guru, and I want to get to some sound here from him. And he talked about the Giants being quiet at the trade deadline and what that means for the team. Here's Bobby Evans.
Well, I think if it had been a normal season, you know, maybe I would be. I think that this is such an unusual season, which with the additional playoff teams, it gives everybody a fighting chance. And so I think it does ultimately come down to deals that makes sense for the long term. And I think I would have been more surprised if they had tried to, you know, do much to reach to, you know, overreach in terms of acquiring guys, because this certainly doesn't seem like the time to do that, even with the playoff chances, but not selling off as many guys. It's hard to be surprised given the nature of this season. I think in a normal season, yeah, I would have been surprised.
And again, this isn't, it is not a normal season. And Kevin Gausman yesterday, he was one of those guys that was rumored to have where teams have shown interest in a guy who's having a pretty good season. Teams show interest. That's the vague term. Teams are showing interest. Kevin Gausman was one of those guys where teams did show interest, and he had a good start yesterday. But for me, it's not regular this season. And somehow, at 18-19 on the year, the Giants are in contention for a playoff spot. As a matter of fact, they are in that eighth playoff spot right now with that win over the Rockies. And it's a situation where you weren't going to get much in return for Kevin Gausman in the first place. I like him on this team. He has got one of my favorite pitches, at least strikeout-wise, to watch. You know, when a batter has two strikes on him, he's going to be throwing that split finger or changeup. People have been combining it. It's hard to say because you hear them call it a split change. What does that mean, a split change? Just call it a split finger fastball. It's just a slow split finger fastball. That's all it is. Instead of a split change, you don't have to make it all complicated. That splitter that he has is lethal, and that's why he is eighth in the league as far as strikeouts per nine innings. He has 12. The league leader is Tyler Glasnow from the Rays, who has 15, which is pretty remarkable. But them staying quiet at the trade deadline and them going for it this year, I got no problem with it. The competition in the playoffs probably not going to be as good just because we do have the expanded teams, and teams like the Marlins could be getting in. Keeping track of the Miami. We are keeping track of the Miami Marlins, everyone. And in case you aren't, I am for you. Let me do that. They beat the Blue Jays yesterday, 3-2. Starling Marte with the home run. I can't even name any really other Marlins players. Miguel Rojas, I guess. Is Lewis Brinson still there? I don't know. 888-957-9570 is the Chilton Auto Body text line and the phone number. But one guy who had a good game yesterday was Joey Bart. He went 3-for-5, had an RBI, and he's looked good at the plate so far. And Bobby Evans spoke about Joey Bart and possibly changing positions.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that that'll be a focal point. I mean, I think that one of the things that I've seen the Giants do more than ever is really give guys opportunities to play multiple positions and be transferable and create options in the lineup for the manager. That said, you know, again, you're looking at Bart's first 30 days in the big leagues here soon. And, you know, Buster's first 30 days in the big leagues were in September 2009, and he had very limited at-bats. And partly because of, you know, his long year and performance in the fall league, you know, that summer we ended up going with signing Molina back. But by June, we were given the everyday job to Buster. So development takes time. Adjusting to the big leagues takes time. I don't think it's necessarily in his best interest to come up and spend a ton of time at a different position, but we did it with Buster. I mean, when Buster was called up in I think May of 2010, he started hitting down the lineup and he started playing at first base because Molina was their everyday guy. And eventually he worked himself into the everyday job behind the plate. Maybe that happens, you know, as early as next year with Joey. Maybe not, maybe a year after, but I think that there's certainly a pathway for him to be the everyday guy behind the plate at some point. How you get there, yeah, I think you got to be creative.
I think behind the plate, though, Joey Bart has looked really good. And I think that besides, you know, maybe not being super in sync with Johnny Cueto just yet, not really. Johnny Cueto and Chadwick Trump appear to work pretty well together. But other than that, I like watching Joey Bart behind the plate. He's an entertaining catcher to watch. He just looks menacing behind the plate. He looks like a veteran back there, even though he's obviously on his rookie season. But he's looked good also in the batter's box, and we'll see what's to come with Joey Bart. He's the one player that a lot of us are paying attention to, but another guy we're paying attention to, and you know, I'll play the highlight here. This was something impressive. Now, we've seen what Mike Yastrzemski has done in the box, at the dish. He's hit very well, and he's one of those guys who's quote-unquote a late bloomer. Very old school. Very old school to have a late bloomer on a team. Right now, especially in this day and age in baseball, where a majority of the guys who are performing are the young prospects that are coming up. I mean, you hear the names that are being thrown around as far as the superstars, Fernando Tatis Jr. being the primary one. I mean, he's still in his early 20s, and Yaz is in his late 20s. He's one of the better players on the team. But this play yesterday, besides Dickerson's three home run came to make it 16-2, Yaz and this catch on Daniel Murphy, very impressive.
Hit well to right. Yastrzemski over. He dives and he makes the catch. He was in the air for a while, and he takes it away from Murphy.
He is one of those guys, credit NBC Sports Bay Area with the audio, that could have been a trade piece. Didn't know how much you'd get in value for him, and Bobby Evans spoke about that on Mike Yastrzemski and his value with the team.
Well, I think you want to continue to get. I mean, he's feeding the ball club energy. I mean, he's feeding your young players, he's feeding your older players, he's giving, you know, future players that are not yet in the big leagues in the system hope that they can make it too. There's a lot that he embodies for a system, for an organization. You know, the way he goes about his job, not only his production speaks for itself, but just the way he goes about his job is, I think, is very impressive to those on the inside as it is to those on the outside. And I think, you know, that sends a message in your system. And you don't, I don't know whether you're contemplating, you know, you don't have to contemplate your 2022 roster right now. You just need to contemplate 2020 and soon 2021. And there's no reason for not to have him a part of that. You know, again, no club's going to come in and blow you away on acquiring, you know, a guy that's in a late bloomer status. But, you know, you never know. And if they do, you know, look at, you know, Pham got traded. I mean, he had, you know, some late blooming success and got traded a couple times. So, you know, you never know. But in many respects, you want to ride it out and enjoy the production that he's bringing, the off the field production that he provides, leadership, and then ultimately, you know, play it year to year and situation to situation.
And Bobby Evans, at the beginning, with what he said, perfectly coincides with that diving catch. That diving catch that he made yesterday is something you haven't seen much from Giants players. I mean, they still had more errors than the Rockies yesterday, even though they won 23-5. But that lack of outfield presence that they have is the reason they had quote-unquote interest, incredibly vague term, they had interest in Jackie Bradley Jr. Because Jackie Bradley Jr., as far as hitting, his offensive production, you're not going to trade for him there. You're going to trade for him for his glove because he's one of the better outfielders in the league and has one of the best arms in the league. That catch right there yesterday, it gives the team a spark. It gives them something. It just shows that maybe they have something in Mike Yastrzemski that they don't necessarily have all over the field. It's curious to see what Mike Yastrzemski's future will look like with this club. He's hitting 287 right now with a 986 OPS. And if you don't know what that is, that's on-base percentage combined with slugging percentage, and 986 is pretty good. Something that I haven't mentioned since really the beginning of the show, but this this is just the most impressive part to me, among the fact that they had 23 runs in that game. It's the amount of hard-hit balls they had yesterday. Alex Dickerson had five of them. You don't normally see a player having five hard-hit balls, and when they count them as hard-hit, that means they are over 97, 98 miles an hour. And in total, the Giants had 24 hard-hit baseballs yesterday. If your team is having a good game offensively, they might get maybe 10, 12 total. So to have 24, that's what stuck out to me. And you had Brandon Crawford had four of them. Joey Bart had four of them. Alex Dickerson had five of them. Rockies pitchers weren't missing any bats yesterday. None at all. None at all. It was a lot of fun to watch. A ton of fun. But switching over, and we're going to be, I'm sure you're going to hear a lot from Kozlo and Dibs and their thoughts on the 23-5 win, as well as that ending with the Jazz versus the Nuggets. Very entertaining. And again, I'm going to read that text one more time from the 415-888-957-9570 is the Chillin' Auto Body text line. Langford, the Jazz versus the Nuggets shot the ball like you at your 24-hour pickup games. I'll take that. I'll take that. I will take 25% shooting at a 24-hour pickup game. I will take that happily, sir. As long as you don't call me Kemba Walker going 1-for-8 from three, then I'm good. But switching over to football a little bit, I just want to get to this update here from Cam Inman talking about Fred Warner. We don't know what to expect since Fred Warner was put on the COVID and reserve list. And 49ers insider, 95.7 49ers insider Cam Inman shed some light on the situation. And here he is talking about it. And this is something you should listen to in case you're wondering what's going on with Fred Warner.
Fred Warner went on the COVID reserve list yesterday, and I think the minimum he can be out is 5 days from the time he took his test. So we don't know what specific day he took his test other than he didn't practice the last 2 days. So we assume the test was either Friday or Saturday. So you can go to 5 days there, so maybe he's back practicing on Thursday. We're kind of in the dark is if he has symptoms, if he actually has COVID-19, it could be 10 days, and then another 3 days he has to have been no symptoms. So it's kind of a moving target here. We got to find out what actually his status is. The 49ers are not allowed to disclose it. Fred didn't disclose it on social media. His agent, when I reached out to him yesterday, didn't want to disclose it because of medical privacy. And that's all understandable. We're, 12, 13 days out of the season opener. I don't think that's in jeopardy from the way everything else has played out with other guys that have gone on this list. But again, we honestly don't know what his status is, so it's really hard to predict what will happen.
So it's sort of a mystery, and to kind of put it into a little bit of perspective, could be there for a minimum of 5 days, and that's it. Don't have much to worry about, but they don't have they can't disclose any of the information that's going on with it. And the longest that a player has been on the COVID reserve list was 34 days. So that's just to put it in a little perspective, as we're all a little, we're all, I hate using this line because of High School Musical. We're all in this together. My gosh, that's 5 a.m. material right there, folks. We're all in this together. We're all kind of made up in mystery here. And to speak on the Raiders and the injury to Tyrell Williams, that's an interesting one to keep an eye on. Look, if you're a Raider fan and you're watching him in Vegas, just expect that you're going to get a lot of production from Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller. The reason that Derek Carr's numbers make him look like a dink and dunk quarterback, because that's the type of offense the Raiders run. They're going to run first with Josh Jacobs. They're going to run him up the gut, and they are going to make short intermediate passes. And Derek Carr's going to make those accurate throws. You're going to be seeing a lot of that this year. Not so much the deep ball to Tyrell Williams. Henry Ruggs hopefully can take over. Brian Edwards has had mixed reviews from camp, so we don't know what to expect from him. Third-round pick. From the 669, you're trash at basketball and trash as a radio talk show host. Thank you, 669. Love you, too. Love you. Here's a quick update on George Kittle before we get out of here.
He's expected to get back into practice later this week. They're off today, but they get going Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Next week will be like a regular practice game week. He should be fine.
From the 707, could have not just mentioned it. I'm sure a majority of your listeners haven't seen High School Musical, but you have. Kozlo and Dibs coming up next.